Folks, if you're liking what you're getting from 30 MPC, the number one way you can support us is by subscribing to our newsletter. Every week, you only get two emails. On Monday, you get a content roll-up of everything that dropped last week. And on Fridays, I pick one topic and I personally write a deep dive on things like how to cold call, how to run a discovery call, or even how to hire an AE. So if you're liking what you're getting here, take 2 seconds, go to the show notes. You'll see a button to subscribe to our newsletter, or you can go to 30mpc.com/newsletter and do it there. We'll catch you soon. Cheers.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. My name is Armand Farouk, and I'm here with my co-host, Mark Cosiglo. And today is Chase Massione. He is a commercial sales leader over at Zip. And if you ever wanted to learn how to teach discovery, folks, this is the one to listen to. Mark, why should people listen?
I've had a lot of conversations about discovery. I fairly regularly pick out a nugget or two. I'm going to say this was a whole hand of nuggets, 5 nuggets of awesome discovery coolness that I think that is super actionable. So I'm super pumped for people to listen to this one.
Let's roll.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. If you get an email and the action required on that email is going to take you less than 2 minutes to do it on the spot. It's not worth adding it to your to-do list, having to look at the item, remember what you need to do. That's going to take you more than 2 minutes anyway. So do it on the spot, get it off your plate. Now, we documented our best templates and tips to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that documentation for free at the link in the show notes.
Your ZoomInfo actionable insight tactic is called Jane's Moving Up. Why? Because that's the email subject line you'll use when you get a real-time notice that your prospect Jane just got promoted. From there, in the email, explain how ZoomInfo helps rising sales leaders win their first 90 days on the job by highlighting coaching opportunities or supporting a team-wide prospecting push. And you can try out this trigger-based email template for prospect promotion and 4 other scenarios inspired by ZoomInfo's go-to-market plays. Link in the show notes. This actionable competitive tactic from Clue is the trap question. Steer discovery toward the winning zone. If we're competing with a podcast that has no newsletter or webinar series, we might ask a trap question like, how do you figure out if those podcast listeners are making their way to your mailing list? And when you're in a head-to-head, there's no better way to prepare for your next competitive battle than with our trap questions and battle card templates from our friends at Clue. The link's in the show notes. This week's actionable prospecting tactic is from Sixth Sense, who shows you the prospects who are most likely to buy so you can get more meetings with fewer activities. Personalizing cold emails requires you to only change the first paragraph in a trigger template. All you have to do is tie the research to the problem you solve in paragraph 1, and then switch that out while you leave paragraphs 2 and 3, your solution and call to action, exactly the same. And so we are giving you 6 of these trigger templates with our partners at Sixth Sense. The link is in the show notes. Alrighty, Chase, welcome to the show. We start every show with your top 3 actionable leadership takeaways. Let's get your 3.
My first one is what I call disco breakdown. And this is where we use Gong to do scorecards on a weekly basis for all of our reps. And as part of that, while I'm watching the video, I type out in the scorecard every question that they ask from a discovery perspective. And then together, once a week, we pick one and do it as a team. And then individually in our one-on-ones, we review these. And we look at the questions that they asked and what white space that was filling from a discovery qualification standpoint, and review basically, why'd you ask the question? Is it really the question you wanted to ask? And if not, what would have been a better question? And we use that over time to really establish a set of discovery questions we want to default to, and just as a training for the reps.
Boom. What's number 2?
I call it build your own ICP. And this is one that I stole from John McMahon. But basically, we sit down with the reps and have them go through the 8-step program of basically building our ICP over again. Every company has an idea of what their ICP is, but I found that reps don't always understand why it is that way. And so we start with, what are our defensible product differentiators? What can we do that nobody else can do? What pain points do those solve? What use cases do those pain points tie to? Who would own those use cases within an organization? What companies are most likely to have them, where they're going to be the most valuable? And what that allows us to do is basically help the reps understand the why behind who they're calling on and be more informed and sharper when they get on those calls.
Let's go. All right, what do we got for 3?
This one I call digital shadowing. It's maybe the most obvious one, but I have a remote team. And when I previously had an in-office team, I would have the reps sit in and listen to calls together. And they were responsible for, if you were shadowing, taking notes and then providing feedback to the reps. And so what we do now with Gong is have the reps go in and once a week, listen to at least one call. Sometimes I'll ask them to do an entire sales cycle and take notes on it. What are their takeaways from it? What did the rep do well? What didn't they do well? They hand that over to the rep. So they're doing some coaching there. And then they're learning from it as we go. And if they find anything that's really stellar, I ask them to pull those out as snippets and put them in our team channel so that everybody gets to learn from the really good things. And we try to focus that on deals that are closed one so that we're enforcing good habits.
All right. We're going to get into like my favorite topic in sales discovery. It's the foundation of good deals, the foundation of good customers. Honestly, I think it's the foundation of good salesmanship. And so I'm super interested in this document. So in case the listeners don't know, this is actually a professional podcast. Armand isn't like winging this thing. They have videos you got to watch to get on, prep docs you got to do. You got to make sure that you hit the mark on certain things. Mondo will tear you apart if it's not actionable and tactical. Chase came prepared to this interview. And so I would love, Chase, for you to kind of walk us through this document that you've created. I have a rep. His name's LJ Habush at Catalyst. He's the most detailed note taker I've ever worked with. And whenever he gets me into a deal, I can catch up in like 3 minutes by reading his doc. And it feels like this doc is kind of like a tool like that, something that somebody can use to take notes and guide themselves so that they know exactly what other people need to understand how to do their job. So you want us kind of walk through the doc real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. So to your point, I think this doc is very much for kind of teaching people how to fish a little bit. So there's four main sections to it. You have first prep, which I'll go into each of these in a little more detail. Then essentially a note-taking template for when you're on the call. Then a series of bucketed discovery questions to ask, kind of pre-bucketed for you. And then last but not least, debrief questions to kind of review the call overall and decide how qualified it is.
All right, Chase. So you have a few different sections of this doc. For everyone who wants to follow along, you can go check out the show notes and we will link to this doc so you can follow along on your own. What Chase has built is a step-by-step discovery prep doc. And the three sections that you mentioned, Chase, are the upfront sort of like firmographic point of view stuff that allows you to understand who you're talking to. You have your note-taking template. You have example questions. And then you have a debrief section at the end. So let's start with your upfront point of view section. There are three parts of this. It looks like you have some stuff around the purpose of the call and the outcome of the call. Looks like you have some stuff around the prospect, and it looks like you have some stuff around the company. Can you talk about what you're having your reps do here?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the first section, it's really about making sure you have a clearly defined goal and desired outcome from the call beyond an agenda. So I want them to have thought through, hey, if everything goes the way that I want it to, what is going to happen at the end of this call? What am I going to find out? What am I going to suggest as next steps? For the prospect and company background, on the prospect side, some of it is just getting to know the prospect a little bit to show you've done research and, you know, have some things to talk about. But I also have them look at things like, have they published posts or articles? And some of that is sizing up the prospect a little bit, sort of externally looking at propensity to buy. I found that people that are building a career tend to be more out there from a LinkedIn perspective, or they've been in interviews, things along those lines. And so I have the guys go and look for that and size up their prospect before they get on the call. And then from a company perspective, similar idea, zip sells, procurement and AP solution. And so I want them to start thinking about the company and how it may relate to our solution, what they could be buying, what challenges they might have, is it growing or shrinking, so that they can go into the conversation with a perspective that they're prepared to share with the prospect.
Chase, can you talk about this last section you have here around, you're taking things that you're seeing about the company. Are they growing or shrinking? Recent news, funding, previous zip engagement notes. And you're using that to formulate point of view, or have your reps almost come in with an idea of where this discovery train is going. Could you give some examples of what you tell your reps to look for and how that might change a zip deal cycle?
You know, I think growing and shrinking is maybe one that's interesting, right? Because it doesn't mean, hey, they're shrinking, we just shouldn't talk to this company. What it means is that you need to change your talk track and your perspective a little bit going into it. So what we do is help companies control spend. If you're shrinking, that's probably something that's very top of mind for you. But it also means you're going to be more price sensitive, and you're going to have a good talk track for speaking around this idea of, hey, you want me to spend money to save money when we're in dire straits right now. We just cut headcount, those things. And that's very different preparation from, hey, we're growing so fast that our processes are not going to be scalable, and we're going to need to have a solution in place that's going to allow us to grow into where we're going overall. And those are the kinds of things that you need to start thinking about in general. There's also the idea of, like, what do you do as a business? Well, if you make laptops, the things that you're buying are very different from if you're a professional services company, and you need to already have a perspective on that, be able to speak to some of the trends in their market to sound a little more consultative and to earn some buy-in from the prospect overall.
A lot of times, especially if you're just starting out in discovery or if you have reps who are new to the organization, it's not that you're coming in with a locked-in perspective on the problem that they're going to have, but you sort of want to be ready for where these things go. I remember when I was at Pave, we were a compensation solution, and I would see reps go into a 50-employee company, and they would talk to them as if they had all these built-out compensation processes, and they were like, let me find the problem with their last compensation review and figure out how to solve that problem for them. And I'm like, no, guys, like, under 100 employees, they're probably running their first one. So this is get ahead, do it right the first time. 100 to 500 employees is like figuring it out, locking in on your comp philosophy, starting to build some infrastructure. 500 plus employees is like, holy cow, this thing sucks. And obviously there can be crossover between those three different segments, but you don't want to come in asking ridiculously enterprise types of questions for your SMB deals, or you don't want to ask questions that a growing company would normally have when you're talking to a company that's cut half of their heads in the last year, give or take.
100%. It's all about that context. It's similar for us, right? A company with 200 employees has no procurement function. They just have finance and somebody does that work. But a company with 300 or 500 people maybe has made that first hire. And the value that people place on the procurement process and their understanding of it is going to be dramatically different. And you need to do some research to understand where the company stands so you have the right context and you start the conversation in the right place. I compare it to the water cycle. Like, if you had raindrops falling on a mountain, they all want to get to the ocean, but the path that they take that's most efficient to get there is going to be very different depending on where they start. And you need to know where you're starting the conversation.
Damn, somebody's reading some haikus or something. Man, I'm the king of analogies. I'm stealing that one. I love that, brother.
There's a handful of reps somewhere rolling their eyes right now because they've heard me say that so many times. Yeah, 100%. I love analogies.
That's when you know you got a winner. Listen, I did something very similar at Outreach and at Catalyst where we had something called a problem hypothesis, where we would take all of this research and put it into a succinct problem statement that we would say to the buyer, hey, we've done our work ahead of time. And we have this problem statement that we have put together for you. It could be totally off, but it might also be a dead bullseye. Would you mind if we shared it with you and you give us your idea on how we did? And that formula is, despite A, we can't do X, which means we don't get Y as measured by Z. A are the current investments that they've made in that. And maybe, like, you know, in your example, Chase, they haven't made any investments in procurement yet. But if they have and you can figure those out, it makes you look really awesome. And also, when you can make something they're already doing successful, that's a lot less political capital for a buyer to invest in something they've already invested in rather than to do something totally new. So despite A, can't do X. X is like typically that BTL user type problem, like the people that are in the system, what they can't do. And then the you don't get Y, that's like the business problem or the ATL above the power line issue that they're not getting because the users can't do what they want to do. And then as measured by X is the proof of how big the problem is. Like, show me the metric that says this is a big problem. And I think your reps are doing all of this research. Imagine how dope it would be if they put that statement together and been like, could be off, but we really want to show you how invested we are in this conversation. And I think it completely changes the tenor of a conversation when you're doing that.
Mark, I love that idea. You and I had spoken briefly about that previously, and I already brought that up to my team a little bit. I think we talk about doing the recap, and to me, that is like a much more polished, kind of more complete version of recapping to people what you've heard, where it's more of bringing your own perspective to it. And, you know, in terms of getting a prospect to believe you and believe that you're an expert, I think it's gold.
Yeah, it makes you an expert. I want to get into something that's very, could be vernacular, but I think it's such an important concept is you said that you think people confuse or do call agendas, but they don't think about the call outcome. Unpack that for me, dude. I think that that's just full of stuff for sales leaders to understand.
Yeah. So a lot of times when I'll sit down to do a prep call with a rep, right, they'll show me their agenda and it's okay, we're going to do intros, we're going to do a quick overview, ask some questions, and then we're going to show a demo and we'll talk about next steps. Like,
I've seen a few of those.
Yeah. And the thing is that there's two goals, right? We have a goal and the prospect has a goal. The prospect wants something out of that call. And if you don't know what it is, you need to ask. That's part of it. But you need to know what you're trying to achieve. So on an intro call, what are you trying to achieve? We want to qualify whether or not this person in this company are a good fit for our solution. And if there's enough pain in this organization to drive a decision, that is a goal. And how you get there is through an agenda. And hopefully it can be a little more detailed than the one that I just outlined. But on the flip side of it, what is the prospect's goal? What are they hoping to get out of that same call? On an intro call, it may be a fairly similar goal, right? Is this a solution that can in any way help me? I think a lot of prospects go into calls without necessarily knowing exactly what the technology does. They could be totally off. So that's part of it. It's not just the goal, but what are the next steps? What are we going to do if we achieve our goal? Right. If we say, if both the prospect and us says, hey, this is worth our time, this makes sense, there's real value here, what are going to be the next steps that we suggest? And it needs to be something that you've thought about and that you lay out at the beginning of the call and not something you surprise people with at the end, getting some of that buy-in up front. I think anybody that's done like the upfront contract training has heard similar stuff, but you have to do those things and they will increase your conversion rates immensely.
Give me an example of a good outcome that a rep would come to you and you'd be like, that's a dope outcome. And give me an example of a bad outcome where you'd be like, hey, let's work on this a little bit more. You're not thinking about it correctly.
A bad outcome would be like, they agree to next steps, right? They agree to a demo. I think that it needs to be more nuanced than that. So I have an example here, right? We've come to an agreement with the prospect that there is a high enough level of alignment that it makes sense to keep moving forward and to pull in additional resources. So both parties are willing to pull in more people. It's a little test for whether or not we've actually achieved our goal. And I think that those are the kinds of things that we're looking for, that where there's more thought put into it than just they said yes to talking to us for an hour longer.
So you're thinking like, maybe they can come with that generic book a demo, book a value consulting, whatever. But you want that next part of that sentence, which is, yeah, but why? And how do we know that you're actually engaged when you're doing that? We're not just booking a demo because that's what you do next. You're booking a demo and I'm seeing you invest into this cycle rather than just showing up for a demo. Like that second sentence is what you're really after.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that there needs to be some room for is some flexibility on exactly what those next steps are. So how can you say before you get on a call that a demo is the next step that we should be closing for? You're not going to know until you've had that conversation and you may need to do more discovery, or you may be talking to the entirely wrong person. They may have no responsibility for the process that you're trying to sell into. And so you need to have an outcome that's more geared towards something you can achieve, that you know you can achieve, versus what you hope you can end up at.
So key takeaways on this section, you're having your reps come in with a point of view based on the company, based on the person, and you're also having them plan what they want to do in the call, but also what they want to get out of the call. And those are two different things. If we keep scrolling through this thing, what I'm looking at next for anyone who can't see this thing or doesn't have the doc pulled up themselves is you've got some obvious things around like who's on the call, when the meeting is, all that stuff. But you have a pretty descriptive or prescriptive
discovery flow. It looks like command of the message. You have current state and challenges. You have impacts and negative consequences of that challenge. You have the desired state and positive outcomes. And then you have the required capabilities to achieve those positive outcomes. And so my guess is your reps come in with this great point of view. You're not like, okay, start at number one. What is your current state and your challenges with your current state? Could you talk about, like, how do you actually have your reps use this note-taking doc?
One, this is kind of a simplified version so that they can use it live on the call and actually be filling it out. And to your point, no, it's more there as a reminder. And so that as they're having a discussion, they can drop discussion notes in these buckets and make sure that they've covered everything as much as anything. So in terms of how I train them to use this, they can kind of keep running notes in the discussion area. They can then cut things and paste them up into the discovery area as they bucket them. They can do that after the call if they want. I also like having the follow-up items and next steps on there so that you have a separate place for those. It's a nice professional touch at the end of a call to read back the follow-up items to people before moving on. And then you can actually send this document out as long as you're not taking notes like, I really don't like this guy, then you can send the document out as your minutes afterwards as part of the follow-up. But the actual discovery that we're training on is kind of something that I talked about before. We're doing that all the time in enablements. We're talking about the questions that we ask. And then further down below, there's a set of questions. Generally, it starts out more conversational. I do ask the reps to pre-write 3 to 5 discovery questions at the top of that note-taking template that are like, come hell or high water, I'm going to ask those 3 to 5 questions no matter what. On an intro call, the most important thing that you figure out is there a pain and is there enough pain to drive a decision? And hopefully, if you can take it one step further, who owns that pain? Is it the person you're talking to or somebody else? So that's really where a lot of the focus is on this intro call. That's why that's what's in the note-taking template. And we use the Sandler pain funnel. So start it discussion at a high level. Start working down into what level of purview do they have for the processes that we're trying to sell into. And then if you feel like you're talking to the right person, start talking about that current state. Don't say current state, but ask good generic questions. And then the pain funnel's on here so that each time that somebody starts to share something with you, you can just quickly glance at it and ask those second, third level questions that really get people talking about kind of the need behind the need, to quote the first sales training I ever took, and to dig into some of the impact so that you can get a sense of, is there enough here to get someone to buy software? I think that's a big trap we fall into, or that I see reps fall into, is like, people will talk about pain that aligns with your solution, but we don't always get down into the level of, is it enough to drive you to spend money on the problem?
So for the folks who aren't seeing the second part of what we're showing on the screen here, is Chase has on the first page the classic command of the message funnel, like I said before, but then he also has a list of discovery questions that are the classic Sandler pain funnel, which is, what are your challenges today? Tell me more. Can you be specific? Why do you think that's happening? Out of everything you could fix, why this, et cetera. It's as if someone were answering these sales questions. It's just how you go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Can you convince the grouchy old man in me why it makes sense to start someone on a list of common questions versus giving them a more abstract flow of problems that they need to navigate through?
One, I think this is not intended to be something that the reps are sitting and staring at while they're asking the questions. This is a point of reference where if you get stuck and you like can't think of these things, then go back to it. I am very cautious. Active listening is as important as knowing what the right question to ask is. So I am inclined to agree with you to a certain extent, but with SMB reps, with younger reps, there are times where they're going to get stuck and not know where to go. And having this as a reference, if they're working down that funnel, like you said, you've given them kind of the theory and they're working down that funnel and they get to a point where they're about to like black out and ask just something nonsensical, then this is a good way for them to take a deep breath, go and find something that is going to at least provide value and fill some blank space in their discovery. And then they can pick it up from there and get back into that active listening, working down a broader, more general funnel of discovery that I think is what you're alluding to.
I think that the pain, current condition, negative consequences, future state or desired state, and PBOs, positive business outcomes, there's a million flavors of that. The thing that I love about command of the message is to say one continent where you're at and the other continent where you want to go must be a bridge between the two, or you can't go from one to the other. That's required capabilities. I'm telling you, my best sellers ever in my career, the one thing that they mastered that nobody else mastered was how to create a list of required capabilities. And required capabilities aren't like Zips feature A or Zips feature B. Required capabilities are things that people want to be able to do that don't have a label or a feature name or any kind of marketized type of thing. It's like, hey, I want to be able to go to my kid's soccer game on Friday afternoon. I want my procurement process to go down from like 5 days as I'm going through signature and get it down to a single day so that we can get stuff implemented. And those required capabilities are, I think, the unlock, because what you end up doing is when you provide them to a buyer, you are creating their buying evaluation. And when you can influence how they evaluate the different people in the deal, you immediately take a top row level of position. You're in the pole position. You're driving and everybody else is behind you. And I just love that you have required capabilities on this document. I think it's a real differentiator between good salespeople and great salespeople.
No, I appreciate it.
So Chase, if we talk about what happens after this, what's really cool about this is basically the recap email. They're taking notes in this thing. They're getting the current state, the negative consequences, the future state, the required capabilities, right? Yeah. And then this goes out in form of a recap. And then you said you also have a slide that basically has this plus the required capabilities to achieve those things on the other side. How much massaging do you have your reps give this thing before it gets in front of a prospect?
So generally speaking, the way that we'll do it is that whole section, and there's one kind of set of boxes that says discovery and has the current state all the way down to required capabilities. So normally that part is taken out and the remainder of it can be sent generally as is. The discussion is where you're going to capture the notes initially, and then you're kind of putting them into those buckets as you go. And that allows it to be pretty much customer facing from the jump. If you're a train of consciousness typer on the discussion side, I would encourage them to take that part out and just keep the what we talked about, use cases, objections, we would change to questions before we send it out. So questions that were raised and how we responded to them, and then the follow-up items and next steps. The prospect doesn't need a full note-taking session of everything that was said. They just need the highlights, and generally those boxes cover it.
I think we should go to the last section, this idea of a debrief. And we all know if you played sports, the best thing was to talk about the game right after the game. If you're in sales, the best thing to do is talk about the sales call right after the sales call. Like Chase, give me like a couple best practices there and maybe a story or two. Like I've never actually formally included that in like a disco document like this, but man, as soon as I saw it, I was like, damn, I've been missing something.
Yeah. So to your point, what I found was that if I waited too long to debrief with people after calls, it's like waking up from a dream. So doing it while it's fresh, I've just found you get much better insight from people and they have a better feel for how the call went. And then really what I'm looking for here is to go a little beyond the MedPit qualification into some of the intangible things. I tend to ask my reps a lot, would you trust your champion to buy software if you were their boss? Those are the kinds of things in the debrief that I want to be thinking about. If you wouldn't trust them to buy software after talking to them for 30 minutes, what makes you think that their boss is going to sign off on them going and asking for something afterwards? And then just trying to think more about the context of the overall conversation that you're having versus the details of the discovery that you got. And that to me informs where you need to go next. And it helps you build a plan for the next call where you start laying out your discovery questions, laying out your goals. All of that can be done immediately after the call. And that's where I do the slash Zoom and Slack and try to immediately get on with people after sales calls.
Boom. Chase, this was awesome. Folks, I know it feels like we did an entire episode going through a discovery doc, and you should definitely check it out. But this was not an episode on a discovery doc. This was an episode on how to break down discovery into digestible pieces for your reps. And the artifact is a doc. So go check it out in the show notes. Chase, we have to move to the final question. What is one bad habit that every sales leader out there should break so that all teams get a little bit better?
I thought a little bit about this one, and this may be just a habit that I had for a long time, but waiting to ask for help or training. I think a lot of people get moved into frontline manager roles because they were good salespeople. And one of the things I really struggled with when I got in here was just knowing, what does a good day look like? What should I be doing day in and day out? And so if you're in a startup, there's probably not frontline manager training. And I had to go seek that out proactively. I had to go to my peers and ask them how they were spending their time. I just see that there's a lot of hesitancy to do that with some of my peers. So that would be something I encourage people to do. I'm sure for your audience, they're already doing it. They're already proactively listening to leadership podcasts, but that was a challenge for me. And I'd encourage anybody who's stuck in that rut to get out of it.
Boom. Amazing show, Chase. Everyone hang on for a 60-second 2x2 Mark and Mono recap coming up soon. Cheers, folks.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. Obsessive checking of your inbox is a total waste of time and brain power. Instead, commit to checking your inbox and responding to email at set times throughout the day. I'm a fan of Boomerang's pause inbox function to keep myself from getting distracted by my inbox. Now, we documented our best templates and tools to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that for free at the link in the show notes. Today's prospecting tip is brought to you by Woodpecker. When you're sending a sales email, you generally want to avoid putting punctuation in the subject line. If you've got an exclamation point, it makes it seem like you're shouting at them, look at this amazing offer, and a question mark just smells salesy, so avoid punctuation. Now, if you want to steal my full sales cadence from my friends at Woodpecker, there's a link in the show notes for you to go get it and try it for free. Otter AI's Autopilot for Sales gives you the freedom to sell on your discovery calls by taking notes for you. One of the best ways to deepen your discovery is to ask your prospect about the impetus behind their goals. So when a prospect tells me they want to advertise on more sales podcasts, I'll say, well, it's not every day that you wake up and decide you want to sponsor a podcast. What's causing you to even explore this in the first place? Now, we put together the ultimate discovery checklist with our friends at Otter AI, which you can get for free at the link in the show notes.
Here's my secret to being a sales superhuman. It's auto reminders for everything. If I expect any reply from a prospect, I press Command H, and Superhuman pops it right back into my inbox if I don't get a reply in 2 days. That means if you handle an objection, if you suggest times for a meeting, or if you ask for cuts back on red lines, always create a 2-day reminder task and assume they will not reply. So if you want to follow up on time every time, you can get a free month of Superhuman by checking it out in the show notes.
Alrighty, Mark, it's a 2x2 recap time. What do you got for your two?
Number one is, I love Chase's thought that how engaged someone is on LinkedIn is a proxy of how good of a champion that they'll be for you as a buyer. The reason I think that's so cool is because that person is championing themselves a lot of times out in the market on LinkedIn, and they therefore understand the emotions, how to champion something, including a purchase inside their organization. So I love that. And then number two was, what you do in a call is different than what you want to get out of a call. And the idea that like an agenda is what you want to do in it, but just explicitly say what I want to have coming out of the call, I think is one of those pro moves.
Number three, I love how Chase runs commercial sales, which is oftentimes a more junior closer. And he talked about having reps come in with a hypothesis or a point of view based on what they see about the company. I thought it was really interesting how if the company's shrinking, the way you do discovery is going to be different from if a company is growing. And then number four, I'm going to be honest, Mark, I don't like listed out discovery questions, but I think Chase had a really good answer for why he lists out discovery questions. And that reason was, this is a flow of how to get people from high level pain to deeper pain. And if you ever run out of questions, I would rather have you pull out one of these backup questions instead of just going right back to a surface level problem or pulling up your demo screen. So those are your four, folks. And if you like this one, the takeaway is obvious. The thing we're going to ask you to do is obvious. Go to the show notes, check out this discovery doc, build one for your own team. I had a standardized note-taking template for my team as well, and you should definitely build one for yours. Alrighty, folks. Peace.
This week's actionable prospecting tactic is from Sixth Sense, who shows you the prospects who are most likely to buy so you can get more meetings with fewer activities.
Personalizing cold emails requires you to only change the first paragraph in a trigger template. All you have to do is tie the research to the problem you solve in paragraph one, and then switch that out while you leave paragraphs two and three, your solution and call to action, exactly the same. And so we are giving you six of these trigger templates with our partners at Sixth Sense. The link is in the show notes.
Today's tip to optimize your sales day is brought to you by Boomerang. Obsessive checking of your inbox is a total waste of time and brain power. Instead, commit to checking your inbox and responding to email at set times throughout the day. I'm a fan of Boomerang's pause inbox function to keep myself from getting distracted by my inbox. Now, we documented our best templates and tools to help you optimize your sales day with our friends at Boomerang, and you can get that for free at the link in the show notes.